Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore. Baltimore Positive. We're positively taking the Maryland Crab Cake Tour back out on the road. We're going to be in Ocean City, Maryland this week on Thursday and Friday. You'll be hearing our stuff over the weekend and finding us out on social media as well at WNST and on my personal social media as well. We're giving away the Maryland Lottery scratch-offs. We get back after it down in Anne Arundel County on the 29th at Pappas. We're going to be joined by Anne Arundel County Executive Stuart Pittman's going to be with us, and we always enjoy our company with him. I'll be with all the county executives this week, as well as Senator Ben Cardin is coming on Friday, as is Senator Chris Van Hollen. A lot to talk about in the future of the state with Wes Moore in regard to stadia and stadiums. You can read my letter or hear my letter to John Angelos out. I'm going to welcome Luke in here right now. And you know, look, Luke's been out on the backfields in Owings Mills. He's out there all week. Obviously up late this week with the Orioles, trying to get the game on his Roku on Sunday and couldn't get it up in Pennsylvania. Dude, you and I, we did a lot of radio together last Monday morning, and the Orioles were sticking around, and the free Kevin Brown thing was a 48-hour thing. Like Monday, Tuesday into Wednesday, by Friday night, he's releasing Stockholm Syndrome, you have Greg Bader press releases. You and I never spoke about it. You lost your electricity for 3 days in the storm. You're trying to cover the Ravens, do your job, keep your battery powered on 90-degree days. I didn't bother you. You did Dennis's show. You and I have not talked about Kevin Brown. We haven't talked about Masson. We haven't talked about the stadium fiasco. We haven't talked about my letter to John Angelos. Like, we haven't talked about any of that. We've talked about baseball because, quite frankly, the team's been interesting enough that we can just talk about baseball. There are bigger fish to fry when there's no lease, when the owner's nuts, when the owner's intimidating everyone who works for him in even a worse fashion than his father to some degree, especially this far down the line. And all of this goes unchecked for a month and nobody says anything about, where's Kevin Brown? And you were out at the ballpark for a week of this. You know, let's have at it, as they would say, as Brian Billick would say, as I was accused last week of muting my own employees about Brian Billick. You'd have to refer to your manual on that. You've worked around here longer than anybody, Luke, but have at it, as Coach Billick would say.
Well, I mean, first and foremost, I think what was amazing about this, as you mentioned, he had been off the air for what, 2.5 weeks, something along those lines. The one thing I will say, in fairness to why did this take so long to get out, the Orioles have so many Masson and on the radio, they have so many individuals involved in that mix that, you know, at first I didn't think too much of it, just knowing that Kevin Brown has other projects that he does. You know, he does work for ESPN. He does some other work as a broadcaster that has kept, you know, taken him away from the Orioles for a week or two at a time over the last few years. So I didn't think too much of it at that point. I think a lot of people were just wondering where he was, but you know, it got to a certain point in time where it's like, okay, he's been gone a long time now. There's nothing going on in terms of college baseball or college softball or other things, college football. We've seen Kevin Brown do games like that. None of that's going on right now. So what gives here? But I think what's so striking about this story, and again, we're a week plus into it now, so everyone agrees on it, right? I mean, you can find so many or so few topics in this day and age, sports, politics, whatever it might be, where you'll find people universally agree on something. And this was as universal as it gets in terms of, wait, he got suspended for what? When you hear the clip that he allegedly was suspended for, and, you know, look, do I think what he said down at Tropicana Field, the stats, the facts that he cited, was that the entire story? Probably not. I'm guessing there were some personality issues, whatever it is, and I'm guessing whatever those other issues are equally ridiculous to what this was that warranted being taken off the air for a couple weeks.
Well, the question would be, what else goes on there? Yeah, right. But what else is happening there?
I mean, it's just, yeah, right. Sure. But I think just what was so amazing to this, and, you know, I don't have anything to add that hasn't been talked about for a week now with everyone talking about this, fans, media, whoever. I mean, this was a national story for 48 hours, as you mentioned. CNN even talked about it, from what I understand. I mean, but you just don't find very many topics or controversies where there's almost universal agreement that it's ridiculous. And this is one of those examples. So, you know, I don't know Kevin Brown a great deal personally, other than just saying hello. I know other members of the broadcast team much, much more closely than I know Kevin. But I mean, this is a guy who's in his early 30s. Anyone who knows anything about play-by-play and that kind of life, working your way up the ladder, you're generally making very, very little money. You know, you're working hard. You have crazy hours, those types of things. So for Kevin to get to the point where he is right now,
Kevin Brown's all my life, right?
Early to mid 30s.
Like, Luke, I've taken more. I took more resumes in my life from kids calling minor league stuff, just trying to have a talk show on my goofy little AM station that nobody listens to, right? Hundreds of resumes. You're one of these guys. I mean, you're the only guy. You're the guy here 15 years. But like, for anybody to have that life, and as a kid, I never really thought I was going to be a player. I never thought I was going to be in radio. I was a writer, right? Like, so it was never my dream. But holding my brush up to the mirror and pretending to be Vin Scully or whatever, like, that was never my thing. But for anybody I ever met that was their thing, I hired a lot of those guys. I sat with, I mean, all of my life I've done that. This is all I've ever done. And to your point, it's such a specialized thing. I say to my wife all the time, I couldn't do it. I've been on the radio 32 years. I couldn't do it. And it's so petty, this whole story. And it just speaks, we can't even talk about Kevin Brown or any of them. You need to talk about John Angelos, because that's really the story.
Sure.
I mean, the story here isn't Kevin Brown. The story about me getting banned isn't me. The story's Peter. It was always Peter. It was always the family. The lease, that's the family. Every single part of the orchestration of why the broadcasts are bad and why you can't get it on Roku on Sunday. And when things go wrong, it has to go back to, they've never really done this well. And the fact that, and I've used this term back when Buck was here, good baseball deodorizes everything. For the fan, mm-hmm. for some fans, for a fan just sitting here watching it, and Costas, I'm wearing my Costas shirt. I was eating crabs with Leonard Raskin Sunday night. Everybody's cheering Cedric Mullins. It's very, very unfortunate, you know. And I told this story in my letter to John Angelos. I'll tell it to you because I haven't told you on the air. I was up in your homeland. It feels like a long time ago now. I went to see Pat Benatar on the weekend before Kevin Brown. On a Saturday night up in Sunbury, Pennsylvania, home of the original Wise Markets, and a lot of wise people there in that spyglass vineyard watching Pat Benatar and Neil Giraldo rock it. But Sunday we were driving back through Harrisburg, through York. We had breakfast in York, your homeland, with a friend downtown York in the Arts District. It was lovely. And I got in the car at like 1 o'clock, had a brunch, and I put the game on for an hour, hour and a half coming home. And there was a point in that game where there was a Mateo hit a triple, but it wasn't a triple. It was really an inside the park home run that he sort of jaked and watched. And the broadcast on the radio, and by the way, I think it's kind of terrible, most of it. I mean, it's so homerish that it's gross. I mean, they all look like they just came out of the team store. Rob Long's pissed at me. I mean, like, y'all are wearing Oriole birds. Put a Masson logo on, put something on that doesn't, ball caps and jackets, and Melanie Newman's walking the catwalk every day with a different outfit and selling stuff in the store, and they're selling cheap. It's just one Vince McMahon 20 minutes after championship wrestling shoot interview. Sell, 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 sell. Everything's great. Everything's perfect. Everything's lovely. And now I know why. You know, I really... Dude, I'm not out there. You know this. They banned me 17 years ago, and I don't want to go out there and be mistreated. I just don't. And I watch it on TV, and Lord knows I love good baseball. My last name's Aparicio. I made a whole life loving this and wanting it to be good. But I think Ben's great. I think Kevin Brown and Ben, put them in there 140 nights a year, pay them $500,000, do whatever you have to do, but make it something consistent that we can all get on with. But Luke, here's the truth, and this is the real truth. The real truth is they want to employ as many people as possible. Lockin' Four can't go 105. Lockin' Four is now under Kevin Brown house arrest, right? Like, he can't say anything. Rob Long can't. None of them can say anything. It's very obvious how controlled this is and how they fear for their gigs. And that makes me very, very sad to have broadcasters held hostage, because I've been one of them. And I told that story to Dennis the other day. Please go listen to my segment with Dennis about my first day at NFL Monster Monday at the Vault, where I had an executive producer came from Fox Television. Wonderful man. But he just didn't know what the hell I did for a living. He was writing note cards. Hello, my name is Nestor. And like handing them to me on my show. I'm like, you're not serious, right? Like, because if you are, I can't do this gig. I can't do this gig. And I tell people all the time, I'll do a little shoot interview with you, Luke. You're a wrestling fan. Let me do a little shoot. Let me peel back the onion of our relationship. People ask me about you, and they're like, hey, what's up with Luke and you? And I'm like, we're kind of like Elton John and Bernie Taupin at this point, in two different rooms. You know, we're a little bit writing the songs that way. We're rarely together. I have pictures of me and Dennis together at Costas the other day, like laughing and smiling, sitting in the same room. And I'm thinking, we don't do that much, but we're always here. I feel like we're in the same room. But I say to people all the time about you, I'm like, I don't know that I've ever had a cross word with Luke Jones. He could be a little chippy when he doesn't get rest. And, you know, I mean, I'm a little different on 4 hours sleep than Luke is. And we, you know, we've made some Super Bowls and we've crashed together 100 nights together in 30 different cities. And I said, I don't know that Luke and I, we've ever had a disagreement. Like, and I think Luke likes me okay. But like the minute I would start telling Luke, now you have to say this about Angelo, so you have to say that, or you can't say this about that guy. No, I'll say it. And if you don't want to say it, that's fine. Everybody knows you're a little bit more of the tamer of the two of us, and a little bit more of the reasoned one in all of this. But I cannot imagine a life here or anywhere else. Even with Host, I didn't like when I had on the air, and I don't like them now. I never went in to them and said, can or can't do or don't, or gave them the Tipper Gore list of banned music or banned songs. I mean, it's pretty clear what the Angelos family was trying to do to me then and now, especially after seeing Mrs. Showalter write a long missive about all the awful things that the Angelos family told her about me, and to avoid me, and that I was a bad human when they wanted to bring foster kids, of which I literally would have been one of them. These are awful people, and they do awful things, and it's shielded by WBAL, by WBFF, by WMAR, not even putting a Kevin Brown story on their website. It's shielded when Kevin Brown issues a statement as making like this never happened, like free Kevin Brown never happened on the air on Tuesday or Wednesday, like they're not all held hostage, like John had a meeting and said, everything's changed around here. Just go be you, Melanie Newman. I don't even know who Melanie Newman is. Never met her. All I know, like, she might be great. She's actually a decent radio she's done it, I guess. She's doing radio on TV. They all got in a pinch. Dave Johnson got called in. I mean, Brad Brock's not very good at all. I mean, I have no idea what direction these people are getting to become better, you know, at their craft. I mean, John Allen and I talked about Steve Whiteman giving voice lessons. Who's teaching them how to do this? Steve Molesky, who hates me. He was great on radio. So I listened on the way to Costas. Steve Molesky's their best play-by-play guy, not named Kevin Brown. But all of them are under house arrest, clearly, for what they can and can't say. And the Kevin Brown, whatever that blink twice, you know, if you're alive message was on Friday, and a Friday afternoon news dump, and they're playing at 10 o'clock at night, that doesn't help the situation. And it really doesn't. The only thing that can help the situation is somebody like me having the freedom to speak truth, and with an FCC license, and what I've stood for in the community all these years, and what truth is. And truth is not that Kevin Brown, and 30 or 40% of the people buy it, Luke. I saw it out online, like, hook in. Oh, see, he was fine all along. They just had him in the basement for a little while. They let him out. And like, the ideology of all of it's so twisted that it doesn't belie what's happening on the field, but it clouds the future, especially when 2 days later, everybody, Luke, my phone is blown up the last week on inside information. I'm going to the insider of all insider state things. You think I'm not going to know what's going on by Saturday morning, or I didn't by Wednesday afternoon when I'm writing what I'm writing? Like, people talk to me, and it's not good, dude. It's not. I mean, none of this is good given the backdrop of a really good baseball team that can win a World Series. The players don't deserve what happened last Tuesday or Wednesday. Kevin Brown doesn't deserve it. Rob Long doesn't deserve it. Melanie Newman, Steve Molesky, none of them deserve it. And I hope Jim Palmer's doing okay. And I wore his jersey to Costas, even though he's really never spoken to me and doesn't care for me. I love Jim Palmer, and I want him to be okay, and I want him back on the broadcast, and I want him engaged in a pennant race in September in meaningful games that he's waited his whole life to broadcast, because he's been the one guy that's been above the fray. And maybe he's too old and frail to stand up, but like, if he and Ben McDonald just came one day and said, none of us are coming to work, that's the way Nestor would have handled it. That's why they don't let me around there. Cause I wouldn't tolerate lying to the fan. I wouldn't tolerate and shame on WBAL. I wouldn't tolerate a broadcast that has me in my car in Shrewsbury looking down on Twitter and seeing the broadcast that I'm getting is not really what happened, with people with their eyes open on social media. It's disgraceful. It's disgraceful.
I full disclosure, I mean, the one example, there are plenty of examples, the Mateo triple thing. I didn't see him get slow out of the box. So I didn't mention anything about it. It wasn't because I was hiding for the team, but I think the big picture.
But you don't have to shill for the team. And at some point they may throw you out. And I'm willing to accept that on your behalf, on our behalf, not that it's right, but that we can't be muted. I'm not going on the radio and saying that Greg Bader press release is fact. It's fiction. And they can play that game at BAL. They can play that game at Fox 45, where the whole friggin' network's fiction, and MAR running for their lives from Greg Bader. I don't. It's disgraceful, and what he's doing to the state, and what he's even really doing to Bisciotti, who I have no respect for either, by the way. But like trying to steal Bisciotti's parking lot and saying, pound sand. And give me $300 million more, which is what he's doing behind the backdrop of them trying to win a World Series, that he doesn't have a lease and he's doing this to broadcasters. What else is he doing from his lair in Nashville? Like, this is not good. This isn't good for Adley Rutschman. It's not good for Gunnar. I've been here for all of this. It's not good.
Adley Rutschman and Gunnar Henderson will be fine. What we are seeing, however, and this is where I want to bring it back to a bigger issue at play here, because this is what it can become. And I think it's when you look at the landscape of professional sports, when you have teams who have their own regional sports networks, and we know that that model is crumbling before our very eyes, not specifically Mass and talking about Bally Sports and everything that's happened across Major League Baseball. And that's going to continue until these teams figure out a business model. But between that, what we've seen in the NFL with teams having their own website that they are portraying as the quote media journalism source.
And by the way, throwing people who've done this for a living in front of the whole world for three decades, just throwing people like me out and saying I'm not legitimate anymore. They've done that. They have,
but
I found that to be inconceivable 2 years ago.
The point I'm trying to make, though, is this is where these things start. And when you have your own regional sports network, and let's be clear, Nestor, teams have always had flagship stations and broadcasts, and it's always been geared towards the home team. Chuck Thompson, God rest his soul, Hall of Fame broadcaster, he loved the Orioles. He hardly ever criticized the Orioles. Now, I am not saying that that is remotely the same as what is going on in the current climate of Masson with John Angelos in charge, but my point is, it starts out with something like that, and you see how it can dissolve and what it becomes over time. We're seeing this with ESPN now, as they just announced they're starting their own gambling network. Think about this. You have an organization that's kind of been, it's been the flagship, so to speak, for sports journalism on the television side for going on, four plus decades now. And where's the actual objectivity there when they now are going to be in bed with gambling more than they ever have been over the last few years. And they have the broadcast rights to the NFL and college football. So there have always been these conflicts of interest to some degree, as long as, you know, teams have had flagship stations and networks and things of that nature.
Well, that would be Howard Cosell calling it the jockocracy.
But the problem is, we are now at the point where it is, you know, in the case of the Orioles here and John Angelos and Masson, how extreme that's become. We've talked about this in terms of NFL team websites and how they cover teams compared to independent media. So that's not to excuse the Orioles here. It's not to excuse John Angelos here. It's completely unacceptable what happened to Kevin Brown. And you're right. I mean, that the statement he put out, first and foremost, I don't think it's 30 or 40% of people buying it. I think it's a much smaller percentage of that. But I think everyone who sees that, even if the Orioles and Kevin Brown take
it. So 80% of the people see them as abject liars, then, like, literally, and know that the broadcasters are working for Pravda and accept that. We don't have a choice, right? You couldn't even accept it on Sunday because you couldn't even get the game in Pennsylvania.
I mean, but I think people get that, though. Like, and look, that doesn't – look, should every broadcaster be 100% objective? And sure, but there isn't enough independent media left at this point in time. I mean, that's just reality. The point I'm trying to make with the Kevin Brown thing, and specifically with the tweets that were put out, which he clearly did not construct. I don't buy that whatsoever. I think most people understand that. I don't think it's 30 or 40%, like you said. I think it's a much smaller percentage of people who took that at face value. Even from a strategic standpoint, whoever constructed that, whoever was giving the directives for that, to something like that should have come out on, I don't know, Tuesday, let's say, to try to defuse the situation. Instead, they let that entire thing just fester. Not even fester. Fester is an understatement of a century. They let that volcano erupt, and then they put that out as essentially a news dump on Friday afternoon. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's unfortunate. Kevin Brown's a heck of a broadcaster. You know, as far as, you know, whether it's you or other people talking about, you know, how can he work for them? He's in his early 30s. From what I understand, he has a baby on the way. Look,
he has a home here. I mean,
he's doing what he has to do for right now.
This is the job he wants for, like, he wants this job. He loves this job. He moved his life here. It's sad to me because Luke, it's not my first rodeo. I had John Miller in my studio literally sobbing in front of his daughter.
Sure.
This is real fresh to me 26 years later. It really is. And having witnessed all of this trash, and to your point, what it leads to. And you say it doesn't lead to anything with Adley Rutschman and Gunnar Henderson.
Because they're going to leave. If things don't improve on the baseball, like, as far as all these issues, because we've said it from a baseball standpoint.
How can Mike Elias deal with this sort of management?
Well, and you know
why
what?
Why does Mike Elias want to be in the bowl on Tuesday night when 15,000 people are yelling at his owner?
Well, it comes down to it. There is a very finite number of these jobs. So that's how you get Mike Elias in the building. But something like this happens. And look, my assumption on this, Nestor, is Kevin Brown, who, by the way, did a great job calling the games over the weekend, did not at all seem to, didn't seem different, let's say, you know, for lack of a better description. And again, I didn't get to see a whole lot of baseball over the weekend because, you know, I was busy with the Ravens. And as I mentioned, Masson, which, by the way, has been run by John Angelos for, 18 years. There's a good reflection right there. There's a perfect example right there, Nestor, of why the state shouldn't give him the $300 million additional dollars that he wants in whatever this vision he has for the Camden Yards complex area. But that aside, you know, Kevin Brown did a fantastic job. My gut, my assumption on this is he's going to play out his contract. And he's going to be a professional because that's what he's been. And he was a professional, even what he got suspended for was being a professional. When the time comes for his contract, he's going to be in high demand because you saw how many broadcasters across the country, across Major League Baseball, were lending their support toward him because anyone who's heard him call games, and I'm not saying he's the greatest ever, but he certainly does a good job. And to your point, him and Ben McDonald or listening to him and Jim Palmer, or he's the best play-by-play person they have. And, you know, I think some of the others do I think Jeff Arnold's solid. Really, I like Jeff a lot. He's paid his dues a long time, but Kevin's the best they have. He's going to go somewhere else because he's going to get an opportunity somewhere else. So I'm guessing, however, and I don't know if his contract runs through this year or next year. I'm sure it's not that long term based on how Masson is operated. He's going to move on, and it's going to be a John Miller type situation, and he's going to go somewhere else. And I don't know if he'll become a Hall of Fame broadcaster in the way that John Miller, has been over the course of his career, and frankly, already was with the Orioles, because John Miller was my generation's Chuck Thompson. Let that marinate for a moment. Chuck was at the end of his career by the time I could enjoy listening to him broadcast games. So
John Miller's happy as hell he left.
he is, of
He
course, he is.
called real baseball, and that speaks to the point of what Mike Elias and Adley Rutschman and Gunnar Henderson are making of this shit show and the charade that goes on, that swirls around everything this family touches. I mean, Dad hadn't died yet, right? When Dad dies, who knows, right? Mom, what the league's going to do. Rob Manfred's trying to get involved. The governor's involved. I'll see the governor this week. I'm involved because I'm going to be the only one. Apparently, I'm the only one talking about it, not named, that doesn't live in New York, that doesn't have a 212 area code. I'm the only one around here allowed to actually speak. I mean, I don't even, it's unbelievable how this came and went. And good baseball will deodorize this, deodorize all of this. But dude, it's there. And it never, it is, it's like termites. It doesn't take a moment off ever on the broadcast, on the backside, how they do business, how they sell tickets, how they sell sponsorships, how they treat players, just all of it. And it's not good. And you know this, I mean, you know me well. I hope for better from him. You know what I mean? Like, I wrote that letter 5 years ago when they hired John Wiedelin, and I hope that he was really wanting to come in and be a guy. I was told by people he was incapable. I was told by people who knew, like, the most storied guy said to me when I was writing the Peter Principles back in 13, 14, he's like, Ness, he's 45 years old now. He's been here 20 years. If he were capable of running it, he'd be running it. And that was 10 years ago. I heard that. 5 years ago, I gave him a chance when it was very clear that, Dad was not going to be a part of this anymore and that they were taking over. I wrote a letter to both of them. I put it out on the website last week just to see where my head was when Buck had left and things were bad and like some sort of hope. I mean, maybe I was a little flippant because, like, where the hell have you been for 20 years if all of a sudden you're competent, right? The level of incompetency, the level of batshittery that I am now going to find out about because everyone talks to me. So I am fine. I mean, my phone's ringing off the hook with people telling me what's really going on. And what I really want to know is what's really going on with Mike Elias. So I wrote to him, even though, I mean, I'm not a media member, but I wrote to him. And just like the real question is what's the future there on a 5-year deal? And like, because you lose him to me, he's your Bill Polian. He's your guy, he's your whatever you want to say. I fully credit Mike Elias with being a genius at this point for now, for the time being, from what I've seen. And I do wonder how this messes other things up. And I know who's really concerned, the commissioner. I mean, this thing's finally gotten decent all of a sudden. Please don't screw it up. Please don't screw it up. And the commissioner's got to get involved in the lease. Westmore's got to get involved in the lease. I don't think there's any, no Angelos has ever given in to any pressure. He fought with his brother publicly last year. So I think that the fighting's just begun. That this Kevin Brown thing and whatever that was on Friday night is endemic of the whole problem.
It was, I don't even want to call it a symptom, but it was just a reflection of how many concerns there still are from an outside perspective, looking at the business side. It's very simple. And look, I in our previous segment, we even talked about this. The Angelos family hired Mike Elias. So they clearly made a good hire. And by all accounts, to this point in the process, they have allowed Mike Elias and baseball operations to do their job. And that's one reason why it's thriving now, because they're competent and capable. Now, I'll point out that rebuilding a farm system and finally becoming a player on the international market and focusing on player development and analytics and sports science and technology and all the different things they do is still a fraction of the cost of having, say, a $150 million payroll, which is kind of where they peaked out, in the Dan Duquette era as far as what they were spending on Major League Baseball players. But it's worked. When you see something like this, look, Kevin Brown presumably is going to move on and find a great job. He'll have a choice of a few different jobs at some point in time, because I'm guessing long term he doesn't want to be here. But in the meantime, he loves calling baseball and he's got a job and he's got a family and he's got to support himself. So I can understand that. I don't blame him one bit. I don't blame him for putting out the tweets that were put out that I'm sure he had very little to nothing to do with, actually, in constructing it. I think that's obvious. Again, anyone who has any kind of a discerning ear and eye can recognize that.
It needs to be said. It's disgraceful. I don't know what else to say.
It's embarrassing. What I'm saying, and this goes to what you just said, losing Kevin Brown would be awful, but losing Mike Elias would be way worse. Losing Adley Rutschman or Gunnar Henderson because you do nothing in terms of signing them to a long-term contract. And I'm not saying you have to sign both of them, but boy, you tell me right now Gunnar Henderson's willing to sign a 10-year contract and I can buy out the first 4 years of free agency, I'll sign up right now without even knowing what the cost would be. That's how much I think of him as a player. But the point is, and we've said this, we talked about this last offseason when they didn't spend very much money. You know, what they did spend was Adam Frazier, Kyle Gibson, you know, $5 million for Michael Givens. That didn't work out, obviously, but it was very, very modest. And that's the nice way of putting it. Trade deadline. Yeah, they got Fujinami. Didn't cost a whole lot for the remainder of, you know, Jack Flaherty. Doesn't cost a whole lot for the remainder of the year. He's a free agent. They're both pending free agents. They are going to come to a point in time where everything you're seeing on the business side, talking about the lease, talking about how profitable Masson is, how profitable the team is because of how well or how poorly it's run from a business standpoint, all the money that comes in from Major League Baseball, where's that going? All those different questions at some point in time. Right now, they haven't run into the baseball side yet because Mike Elias has had carte blanche and they've been in a position where they've been able to build this while having one of the smallest payrolls in Major League Baseball. But they're going to come to an inflection point where if they don't clean up on that side of things, on the business side of things, that absolutely is going to impact what they're doing on the field. And the most dramatic scenario is what you laid out of losing a Mike Elias, losing multiple people from that are really important in the organization from a baseball standpoint. So it, for me, it's really simple. Either you need new ownership. And again, not holding my breath on that. We've talked at years for the complicated things and variables involved with that. Or maybe the best hope, Nestor, is that John Angelos recognizes this. And I'm not,
again, you're in not fantasy land now. I got to stop you right
now.
No,
there. No, no. Hold on. No, let me talk. Come on. Let me talk. I'm not saying that it's going to happen. I'm saying what needs to happen is he needs to hire Mike Elias on the business side and run things on the business side for him, because he's proven incapable of that. And I'll go back to my little silly example on Sunday afternoon of Masson's app not working on a Roku, which is a very popular device that people use to stream. And they couldn't get the Masson app to work, so they couldn't watch the game. And
they did that. They hired that John Wiedelin guy a couple of years ago. He lasted five minutes.
And to your point,
I know people qualified to do that job, right?
Correct.
I do, right? They would never in a million years.
And what I'm saying,
John Angelos.
Right. Well, but at the same time, lots of people said they'd never be able to hire a good general manager, and they did. You know, after we got to a certain point in time, after Pat Gillick was gone, after Frank Wren was gone, you know, they Jim Beattie and Mike Flanagan and Jim Duke, you know, go down the list. You know, Andy McPhail had Peter's trust more than others did for a time, but the farm system was in such dire, terrible shape that, you know, it took him a time. And then finally, Dan Duquette came in at a time where they were able to open up a 5-year window of being competitive and made the playoffs a few times. So they've hired a great general manager. To this point, John Angelos has, by all accounts, allowed Elias and company to do their job, albeit in a rebuilding scenario where you're not spending a ton of money on major league talent, but they're going
they
to
haven't
come
had
to
a conversation about money yet.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm
sure they have.
No, but it's Mike been hasn't spent any of his money, is my point.
It's been
Mike
on the margins,
has never
right.
gone down to the hall and said, I need money. Mike said, here's my budget. Here's where it is.
Sure.
I'm sure of this, Luke. I mean, he hasn't. What did Flaherty cost him? Yeah, not much.
It's not much, right.
Yeah,
and,
yeah, yeah.
I mean,
so
they spent
he hasn't had to make a call on that.
Kyle Gibson, $10 million. You know, they've spent some money, but it's been much more on the margins. And
but my
considering...
point would be it wouldn't be a on the bat phone call. It's a, hey, we're going to set the budget at $60 million next year, and that's what I'm going to spend, and I'm not going to call you. So I don't know there's been a whole
right.
lot of, hey, this guy's good or that guy's good. And I think to some degree, and John thought of himself as a rotisserie baseball player in the 1990s. I don't think John's had any input into Heston Kerstad or whether they
no.
take Colton Cowser or not. Right. Like,
no.
I would agree with you. John's had bigger fish to fry with his father selling off property,
sure.
trying to pay the Nationals, trying to get, you know, Nashville superstars careers. And I mean, he's just doing other things that I don't think he's all that interested in baseball, you know? And when I hear him speak, I don't hear him speak with like that. He's sitting and watching the Norfolk stats last night. You know, I don't get that vibe that that's where he is in his life right now. Nor is where I am in my life, by the way.
I agree with you. And I didn't mean to get too short with you. I just wanted to make my point of what he's done on the baseball side has worked because he stayed out of it. There's been a general manager hired. And one thing I will say, just as an aside on Elias, before I get back to John Angelos, I don't get the sense in, you know, what Mike Elias has done, things you hear, the way he's spoken about this. And I'd throw Sigma Adele in there as well. I don't even get the sense that they are the types of baseball executives, front office men, who necessarily are all that hot and bothered about having the highest payroll in baseball and what that could do. I think there is something to be said to the intellectual challenge of doing this and being successful with fewer resources. Now, that said, that there, you come to a point where, again, there's an inflection point here to you want to be able to keep some of those players. Do I think the Orioles right now, even if things improve, even if John Angelos hypothetically hires better people on the business side and gets out of it, as I laid out that scenario for me, that the only way I see this thing thriving long-term from an Angelos family ownership standpoint would be that happening. And when I say long-term, I mean over the next 15 to 20 years, not the next 2 years. But, you know, you have that, and now I just lost my train of thought. But what you have with Mike Elias, there's going to be an inflection point that you want to keep some of these young players. Yeah, you're probably going to do some things like the Rays, like Cleveland have done. You'll trade some guys as they're getting closer and closer to free agency. We're going to see that. And by the way, there's nothing wrong with that. The Ravens have traded players before they hit free agency. The Ravens have let players go and taken comp picks. You can't pay everybody if you're not going to have a $250, $300 million payroll. That's fine. But you don't want to be a team that's just that the churn is so constant that what you're doing right now or what the Orioles have been over the last calendar year, and let's just say for hypothetical sake, they don't win the World Series this year. My fear for them is that John Angelos, and I agree with you, I don't think he has much interest at all on the baseball side from a day-to-day getting into the weeds, the minutiae, moves, making trades for player X or player Y. But my concern for the Orioles under John Angelos, as things are presently constructed, is he's fine with them being good. I don't think he cares about them winning a World Series. I don't think we're going to necessarily see him open up the checkbook to the degree that would be necessary to try to keep a Gunnar Henderson or someone, you know, guys of that, Nate, you know, Jackson Holliday, 7 years from now, 8 years from now, whenever he's hitting free agency. So my concern from that standpoint is not that the Orioles can't be good for 6, 7, 8, 9, maybe 10 years if they continue to draft and develop well. But what have we said about the Tampa Bay Rays for a long time? And I think it would be difficult to dispute. And I'm not talking about this year's team, but the Rays over the last 15 years, they've kind of been the bridesmaid, but never really the bride, right? You know, they've been good. hey, they've gotten to a couple World Series. So I don't want to say that it's been a, you know, that it's a failure by any
I'll
stretch
take
of the
it.
imagination. You'll take it, but have you ever felt like the Rays were the team to go actually
because
go
they're
win
not
a
a
World
stable
Series?
Franchise.
Well, and that's my point here with at some point in time, all the concerns, all the dysfunction from a business standpoint and Masson and the lack of a lease and all the different things, at some point that is going to bleed into the baseball side if the Orioles are going to maintain this for a long stretch of time. I think they could be very successful. And who knows? Maybe they'll win a World Series and in 2-3 months we'll be talking about a parade in Baltimore. And that'll be great, and that'll be phenomenal. But in terms of sustaining
Well, that
this
happened in
thing,
Kansas City and went away, right? Literally.
Exactly. But again, on the business side and all the different concerns that they have, and let's face it, challenges that just being in this market, there are challenges.
They're
to it. It's
always
going to
have challenges competing in this system with the
no
Yankees
doubt.
And Red Sox. Yes.
No doubt about it.
And the whole country of Canada.
But to this point, all those business issues that have been there the whole time, we know that. As you mentioned, John Vitalin, who was hired, 5 years ago at this
I wrote
point,
a letter to him,
gone
too.
In four,
And,
less than
you know,
four.
I should just put dear TJ Brightman or the next person in the seat. These, you know, nothing's changed other than they're really good on the field. Now, what else can change? The Kevin Brown thing last week is really,
was not
really
a good sign.
Well, I'll just say this because you got chippy with me. Anybody out there who begins a sentence with me, which begins with John Angelos has to change his blank. No, he doesn't. He's a billionaire. He beat up his brother. He beat up his father with the lawyers. He doesn't take phone calls from Rob Manfred. He doesn't answer to anybody or anything or any. Literally, he has no friends that I found here in the like in Baltimore. Like, I on my worst day, I think of him as being someone that's waiting for the Oakland move and saying, I'll do whatever I want. I'll hold the whole thing hostage until I get what I want because I always get what I want. And you can't tell me I'm not going to have what
right.
I want because I'm a billionaire and I get what I want. I got what I want. I told Kevin Brown to sit down and shut up, and he came back and it's fine. You know, like, so I would just say that anybody that thinks he's going to change, I'll say this. Everything about Free the Birds, I was you're 39, right? I'm doing the math on this. In 2006, I was 38 when I did Free the Birds. I actually went back and read because I wrote about my father and his love of baseball and why I was doing it for the city and like that the thing had fallen into disrepair. And this guy was such an awful person, Peter Angelos, at that time. And I really thought like that there was some Charles Dickens, like, you know, that there was going to be an Ebenezer Scrooge realization that you don't want to die that guy. And that's what Free the Birds was designed to do, was to say, we love your team. Don't, you know, you don't need to be a jerk. Right. And everything that's happened to me the last 17 years, including him telling people down the pipeline to tell Buck Showalter's wife that I'm a bad human the day I met her. That's who they are. And there's not at any point where you want to be reasonable. I gave that up like 2006, right? Like after the bird attacked me and there was clearly a hit in my mind, 2,000 people I sold tickets for that night, like all these things we've done. And, you know, I haven't forgotten any of that, but anytime it starts with, well, they'll just change. It'll be like something in a movie. Like they'll just be this heart transplant that, I just don't think you know who you're dealing with. And I think some people may have said that to me when I was your age 17 years ago. Like, and I did have some people, like Steve Miles was one of them, lawyer Steve Miles, a buddy of mine. He's like, you don't, this guy, he's not going to change.
Yeah.
And I thought, no, people can change. I'm a Tony Robbins guy. I believe that. I believe that we're all capable of being better. I think I'm a better person than I was when I did Free the Birds. I think I did it for the right reasons, but I think I'm a better person. And I think we can all be better people. And I think you ascribe to that because you're a good person, Luke, right? And you come from a good family and you're Deacon Jones and you walk your talk and you're a man of integrity. And I know that about you. But when you're not a man of integrity, it doesn't take a, it's like termites. It doesn't take a minute off. And I think like that's a real fundamental problem we have here with this guy saying, there's no deal with Steve Bisciotti. I want $300 yeah. million. Dollars. I want my broadcaster to issue a it never happened. And we're going to like, just the amount of bullshit that happened last week that yeah. we can a week later say nothing's changed. These people are insane. They are.
Yeah. I mean,
and begin with that and don't ever think anything differently. And you can get as mad at me as you want, but like, don't think any differently because I've learned the hard way. They're not changing. Believe me, in 2006, I really believed when I walked in there with my mother, like literally, I really believed that maybe this old bastard would say, these people aren't out to get me. These people love my baseball team. No, I was the guy out to get him. I was a bad guy. Like they told Angela Showalter. I mean, it's gross. It's been gross to be around it. Anytime I've gone down there for the I went to that Oriole Hall of Fame lunch, and you know this for 15 years with Aunt Pat Gates, who mm-hmm. passed away about 5 years ago, at the ripe age of 93, I think she was. She's a beautiful woman. She had been an Oriole advocate, original Oriole advocate in 1957. And she took me every year as her date, and she did it to really piss them off. She loved to see all of them mistreat me. And I that's been my experience. And it's not that they don't like me. They have to not like me. They all have to unfriend me on LinkedIn. It's awful. It's awful. And I, Luke, I haven't been around it. They've been awful. You're down there. They don't mistreat you. And I'm appreciative for that because you don't deserve that any more than I deserve that. But I thought it might've gotten better. I really like in my heart of hearts, you know, this because mm-hmm. I don't talk trash about them on, off, whatever. I mean, they're trying hard. Elias seems like a good – Brandon Hyde seems like a good guy, seems like a guy I would get along with. Like, but the way they've treated me is the way they would treat anybody who would say that Kevin Brown thing the other night is not on the up and up. And
sure.
Like, it's delusional, dude. It doesn't make any sense because it doesn't make any sense. And you have to go with that.
Agreed. And again, when I said what I said and I got a little chippy, it was because I'm laying out the scenario for this to work. Do I think?
But you're laying out a scenario for him to be sane. And I don't know that that's going to happen.
But I am going to be objective here. DeAngelo's family hired Mike Elias. And if someone had told you 5, 6, 7 years ago, as the Duquette era was going the way it was, and we saw how they were heading towards a cliff 18
John
months
thinks
before
he knows
happened.
Media, though. I think he realizes Fair. That the baseball thing's kind of complicated. Yeah, you know what I mean? But
okay.
the Masson, hey, he runs.
But he wants to make money, though, right?
Right?
Yeah. He wants to make money, though.
Yeah, he thinks he's going to get his money from the federal. He's got people going to the feds now trying to get money for a parking lot with a tunnel underneath that he can't build on anyway. And that
owners,
doesn't. And
owners continue
people,
to get public funding.
Really
so, like,
smart people.
Look, it's not right.
That like but, you can't build on that land, and he's like, no, you know, just you won't have a baseball team. I'm not going to sign a lease. So, Luke, I love you. Stay up late, get the toothpicks out. You're going to get some little hot weather, a little humidity here this week for John's boys out there, and you'll let us know how Lamar and Odell Beckham look as well. I hope you get some rest. And listen, I'm older than you. I'll be dead, and you'll still be here. I want them to win for you, for your niece. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like you're a generation behind me. I had it good. I get to still sit here and talk to Ken Singleton and, you know, and remember what happened to John Lowenstein getting run off. And nobody remembers that. I remember that, you know, so I just wish it were different. But you know, tell you what, they're really good. And they could, like Major League, over the next 8 weeks, they could just rip the pieces off the, you know, at least give the fans something. Because this has been great for our city, dude. I can't begin to tell you, sitting over at Costas on Sunday night when Mullins makes the play, hits the home run, when they give up the home run, Bauman, like, it's just, it's fun. It's a lot of fun. And it looked like it's been a lot of fun at the ballpark, too.
It's been a blast. And everything we lay out from a baseball standpoint, it is heading in a tremendous direction. There is a pathway here to maintain this and sustain this for far longer than the Duquette Showalter era did. However, where we come back to the business side, where that there eventually is going to be an inflection point there. And believe me, I don't disagree with what you're saying. When I was laying out what I was saying and got a little chippy, it was telling you how you theoretically do that with the Angelos family still owning the team. Do I think it's going to happen? No, I don't. But I didn't think that they would hire someone like Mike Elias and allow him to do his job for going on 5 years now to the degree that they did. So,
but to my point, they haven't spent a nickel on baseball. It's, you know, they he hasn't had to go down the hallway and ask for money.
Right. I mean, they've spent money. It's just, it's a fraction of what having a $175 million payroll is. So yeah. But again, Peter Angelos meddled some more in baseball operations. John Angelos hasn't done that. Now everything else is wrong. Clearly, as we've seen over the last week, and we'll continue to see with the lease, and, you know, take a look at Masson in terms of why you don't give John Angelos an additional $300 million because of how poorly that's been run for a long time, even with lots of good people working on camera or behind the camera, quite frankly. People I've known that people listening right now don't know.
Who I miss Mike Bordick. I mean, Mike Bordick never had a product that was, I mean, he did in the beginning, but like, and he wasn't great at it at the beginning. I thought he got better, but part of it was he couldn't be critical. And I criticized Mike and gave him a heart. Yeah, Mike's such a wonderful guy. Mike Bordick's one of my favorite people on earth, but Mike Bordick on a baseball side, he was soft on the air, especially soft with how bad they were. He had to be, and they fired him anyway and mistreated him. That's my point. You know what I mean? Right. If I'd have kissed their ass all along,
although Mike, I would also say with that, he also worked with the players and, you know, he was a spring training instructor, all those. Look, again, not to belabor this point, because we talked about it at the beginning of our segment, this kind of stuff goes on with every team in 2023, but here's the major caveat here. This is what it can become. The Orioles are the extreme example of what it can become when it starts as, oh, well, you have a flagship station and yeah, they're going to be less critical than what an objective independent station would be. And yeah, we have a team website and it's not going to be as critical as the local newspaper or the local independently owned radio station. But when you have that and it starts at one level, this is what it can become, where you have a broadcaster suspended for literally stating facts about the baseball team. Facts that were included in the game notes constructed by the baseball team. Facts that were put on a graphic that a producer for the television network had to type up and write and put there. Kevin Brown didn't type that graphic. So it speaks to how ridiculous the whole situation was. And we all agree on that. How's this going to play out from a business side as far as the lease? What becomes of the Orioles when they need to start paying their players and trying to augment this roster and re-signing their people in the front office? I don't know. And that's what is concerning, because they have something going that is really special right now on the field. Really special. A chance to, you know, I don't want to say that they're going to become a dynasty, but they have a chance that they could win a World Series, maybe win a couple of them over the course of the next 7, 8, 9, 10 years. But at some point in time, there is going to have to be a greater financial commitment made to keep and maintain what you're doing. And from that standpoint, I'm as uneasy and as doubting as anyone about their ability to be able to do that. And, you know, it starts at the top with John Angelos. It's very simple.
Sign the lease, man. That's all I got to say. Amen. Luke is here. I'll be in Ocean City this weekend learning more things about the Orioles situation. All of a sudden, I mean, not just a hot button on the field, but certainly off the field for what's going on with the lease and what's going on with Free Kevin Brown. Free Kevin Brown. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking. Baltimore, positive, even when it's not so positive.